Welcome to... Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Cracked Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. In case you listeners missed our earlier show, we are so excited to announce a brand new contributor to our Cracked Rackets team, Damian Cust, going to be joining us as both a writer and a podcast host moving forward. And on today's episode, we have the first edition of his ATP Challenger show. Now, Damian's actually recorded a few of these episodes over the past month. I should say this is his first episode on our Cracked Rackets platform, but he and his co-host break down the past week's action on the Challenger circuit. They preview the week ahead, offer some fun predictions, talk about the latest trends they're seeing on the Challenger Tour. It's a fantastic show that we are so excited to share with all of you listeners. Now, if you want to hear more about Damian, how he got into the sport, some of the things he'll be doing for us moving forward, again, you can go listen to our episode from earlier in the day, Damian joining me to discuss all of those topics. On this podcast, the only time you're going to hear me on the intro and in the outro, as I've got to read through our sponsors, and again, I just wanted to introduce the show to you all, but it's just going to be Damian and his co-host talking ATP Challenge or two, or having already listened to the episode, it's delightful, and I promise you listeners are going to enjoy it. Of course, again, before we get to that episode, the reason we're able to do everything here at Cracked Rackets day in, day out, is because of the support we get from all of you listeners, from our Patreon family, who allow us to take chances to bring in new contributors and expand the profile of things we are doing here at Cracked Rackets. But of course, the reason we're able to do this podcast specifically day in, day out, is because of the support we get from our friends at Turner Tennis. You know the deal. Turner Grip, the only grip that gets tackier when you sweat. Its performance in hot and humid conditions is unmatched. And yes, that iconic blue color that can be seen on the rackets of hundreds of touring pros, it's trademarked, folks. And that's because Turner Grip's synonymous with grips everywhere across the globe. If you would like to join the Turner Grip family, you can call or email them to get college pricing or free samples by emailing sales@uniquesports.com or calling 800-554-3707. Again, you mentioned Cracked Rackets sent you. You'll get better pricing. You'll get free samples. Just contact sales@uniquesports.com or 800-554-3707. With that in mind, let's get to today's ATP Challenger-centric podcast with the one and only Damian Cust.
So welcome to the next episode of the Challenger Tour podcast. And as I mentioned last time, I have a new co-host with me. It's Jakub Bobro, and I'm going to allow him to introduce himself to you.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jakub. I'm very happy to be here. Just a bit about myself. I'm 20 years old. I'm from Bratislava, Slovakia. I'm currently studying journalism at the Glasgow Caledonian University. What else about me? I mean, I first got into tennis when I was 11. I played for 7 years. I've had many different sort of experiences with tennis. I was a ball kid for a while. I've managed to cover some tournaments as media. And yeah, I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah, great. There's actually a question to you that I thought of later on. And because you said you were playing tennis, that's actually going to be a better one than I expected. So it's great. But anyhow, we're going to start from another question from our most active listener, Jan, who this time wanted to know who, you know, in our opinion, is the former college player with the most potential of the ones playing on the Challenger Tour. I think we're going to skip guys like, I don't know, Steve Johnson.
Yeah, I ended up going for sort of three different answers. The first one I picked out was Paul Jubb, who is not quite on the Challenger level just yet, but I feel like we'll be seeing him there soon. He was very good at college tennis. Can't remember quite the name of the school that he played for in Carolina, but he had one of the best seasons there in his junior year. I remember seeing him play a little at Wimbledon in 2019 when he lost in the first round, but he won a set against João Sousa, so that was quite decent. I just feel like he definitely has the talent and the financial backing, being an LTA player. to be successful on the Challenger Tour. another answer that I went for is Jan Zielinski, who I assume you're familiar with. He was also a college player, and he's absolutely killing it in the doubles on the Challenger Tour. One title so far this year, two finals and two semis. So I feel like he's very much primed to continue the proud Polish doubles tradition that has been there in the men's doubles for years before him, with, you know, guys like Kubot, Matkowski, Furstenberg, and so on. But I would say, like, my overall pick for the most talented player that we can be that we can see a lot on challengers is Maxime Cressy. Even though he's not really played challengers this year, he's been going for ATP qualifying without much success. So I feel like we'll be seeing him at the challengers at some point this year. he's just somebody with a huge game, who, I mean, with his style, he gives players a different challenge. So I feel like his matches are very intriguing to watch. And, you know, it's nice to see a bit of serving volleying every now and then. So yeah, those are my answers.
Okay, I went totally mainstream compared to you, but I'm really glad, you know, the Zieliński shout. I remember him playing for the University of Georgia, and when he came back, he actually turned out to be a great doubles player. I think that was, you know, just shows you that for players from small countries who maybe, you know, didn't have such a great juniors career, it's really a great option, because if not college, he probably wouldn't be playing tennis right now. Like, you know, the funding in Poland is so bad. So but anyhow, it's not the topic. I also thought about Cressy. I kind of wanted to make that point later in the episode, talking about someone else, but it's really hard to judge potential for players who play such unique games like Cressy. Like, for example, when you saw Andrei Rublev when he was young, when you see that forehand, you know he's gonna do well. But when someone plays the game quite like no one else does right now, I mean, obviously there were a lot of serve volley players, but, you know, Cressy is pretty much one of a kind right now. So I decided to go, as I said, totally mainstream for Nakashima and Wolf. Obviously we're probably going to talk a lot about these guys on this pod. So Nakashima has already showed up even on the big stage at the US Open against Zverev last year, even if he has a lot of problems. Like, you know, people constantly just name another issues, like, you know, not having the aggressive game to win short points against the top players. He still keeps winning titles, and even on clay this week, actually, maybe we're going to mention him when we talk about Belgrade, that he's rapidly improving on that surface, probably having never really played there in the beginning of his career and, you know, during his early years. And Wolf obviously hasn't played yet this year, but just like Nakashima, he showed up great at the US Open, made the third round, and I think he also has such a huge game that, you know, the upside is ridiculous. Obviously the consistency isn't there yet, but I'm definitely looking forward to watching him. Both were absolute standouts at college. Obviously Nakashima only played one year, but Wolf had one of the best college careers ever, I think, for the Ohio State. I also noted out Rinder Knech and Cressy, whom you already covered. And at this point, I'll say that there was one more question, but I think we're going to talk about Jenson Brooksby later, since these questions...
We definitely will, yeah.
Yeah, so since these questions from the other listener, or maybe we'll just, you know, say his username right now so that I don't have to remember about it anymore. Let me find it. It was... The username on Twitter is Tennis Racket, or More Than a Racket is his handle. So, you know, be patient when we're gonna talk about Orlando. We're gonna answer your questions. Maybe you could actually start with Orlando then.
Yeah, sure. Orlando was quite an interesting tournament. It was a tournament of many revelations for me personally. Mostly the revelation of Jensen Brooksby, who I have not watched before. I've heard of the hype, obviously, with his 2019 US Open run ending Tomáš Berdych's career. But I never actually sat down to watch him. And I had an opportunity to do that twice. And he is a very, very interesting tennis player. He's a very good tennis player, but so unusual in his strokes. I really wish that I'll get to watch him in person soon so I can just really focus on him and like watch him up close, because those are some funky shots that he plays. And yeah, I really just want to see more. Obviously, he won the title there, beating the fifth seed, Denis Kudla, 6-3, 6-3 in the final. In that final, he had a couple of really big moments in the first set, where he basically, Kudla saved three set points on a serve in that first set, and he managed to finally break through. And then in the second set, he was just laser focused, didn't get to even deuce on his serves, not even once. And he sort of just took over there. So very, very, very impressive week.
And his serve is actually usually a liability, right? I mean, it's the one reason that people mention when talking about why Brooksby is not going to be, you know, a future top 10 player or something. And that was actually the point that I mentioned about Cressy, that it's really hard to judge the potential of someone with such unique game style. And one of the questions that we got asked was whether his game style is unique and is it typical for an American? And the person asking seemed to think it isn't. And it obviously isn't, yes. I mean, the strokes, as you mentioned, are just so weird. But it's actually for the good, I think. For example... Today against Kudla in the first set, there was this weird drop shot from the backhand. It landed like in the middle of the court and Kudla didn't really make a move for it, which I was at first pretty surprised by. But then when I, you know, replayed it and just looked at how similar the technique, you know, of the stroke was, that he was pretty much almost finished with his backhand and then could switch. I mean, it was... I think this could be a real weapon if he ever chooses to focus on that. And another question we got asked about Brooksby was what was he doing in 2020? Because as you said, in 2019 at the US Open, he ended Tomáš Berdych's career. And then it was a huge dilemma whether to go to college or go pro. I even read an article today from 2019, which was like four reasons why Jensen Brooksby shouldn't go to college. And he actually ended up enrolling to Baylor University, but never competed for them. And not because he didn't want to, but because he had a couple of injuries. The most important one was a toe injury. Then COVID-19 happened. And at the start of this year, Brooksby decided to drop out and never actually played any match for the university, which now is looking like a pretty fantastic decision. And the last question we had was whether, in our opinion, Brooksby is going to hit the top 100 this year. What do you think about that?
I mean, he's already had a very good year. This is his second title this year. He already made a final before that. But I looked at the rankings. He would need to gain around 450 points until the end of the year to break top 100, which seems like a bit too much. I feel like he'll get close. He can get in the 130, 140 range-ish. I mean, it also depends on how his game adapts to different surfaces, because he's basically only ever played on hard, even in juniors. So I'm quite interested even this week when he plays on the green clay in Tallahassee to see what he's going to do there. But yeah, top 100, not quite, but I feel like he'll get close.
Yeah, I would also go with no. Pretty much similar reasons. I also am completely unsure of how his scheduling is going to be, like whether he's going to come to Europe to play clay or not. Like we know he can be great in the North American hardcore season, but then there's like, you know, three or four big events where he can, you know, get a huge run. Obviously, we might be just really wrong, and maybe he makes, I don't know, like the third round in Cincinnati or a couple more like that. And it's possible, but unlikely, especially with the ranking freeze right now. You know, it's getting tougher to progress. It's getting tougher to rise, but it also makes it much more impressive that he's already in the top 200, having started the year in the fourth one. Anyhow, you mentioned that Orlando was a tournament of revelations for you. So who other did surprised you that much?
Another revelation for me this week in Orlando was Zane Khan, who I heard you mention on the podcast the week before. Obviously, very impressive March, going 14-1 in three futures tournaments in India. And then he was very impressive again here, reaching the quarterfinals and beating Yasutaka Uchiyama, the second seed, in straight sets. He's obviously quite a bit younger. I think he's 17. So obviously a lot of time to grow
he's
still.
A bit older. I think he's like 20.
Is he actually?
But is he? Yeah.
I must have written it down wrong. My bad.
maybe I'm wrong. 19. Sorry. He's already finished 19. Ah, so in the middle. Okay.
Yeah, one of the things that I was impressed with Khan was his point construction. I feel like he's a very intelligent player, and that's a very good basis to start when you're a young player. So I'm excited to see what the future holds for Zane Khan.
Yeah, for me, maybe not revelation, but seeing Christian Harrison do well again was just absurdly impressive. I mean, when you see a run like he's in Delray Beach in January, you don't really expect it to last over multiple tournaments. Also, it's super hard for him because that's only the fourth event he's playing this year. If you're in the United States, you know, if you live in the States and you don't want to travel, it's really hard right now to get any play time. And the fact that he's even by playing like Delray Beach was the second week of January or the first. And then you go to Naples, which was in February, to two ITF events. And then right now in Orlando after a month and a half. So it's really hard to keep up a consistent disposition. And yet he's managing to do that. I was never truly a believer in his potential before this year. But, you know, it really makes me think what would have happened if he didn't have these 8 surgeries and just stayed healthy. Maybe this was really a guy who could have made it big. Another, maybe not someone who surprised me, but Aleksandar Kovacevic also is playing well. We're talking about college tennis. He's still playing. He's how do you call it? A senior, right? When you're on your last year. He's playing challengers from time to time. He's also gonna be in Tallahassee, and every time he shows up, he's playing the qualies there. But every time he shows up on the circuit, he's proving that when he graduates, he's gonna be a threat just instantly to compete for titles on challenger level.
Yeah, just going back to Harrison real quick. It's good to see him finally make the wild cards count. And also there's a little fun factoid about Harrison and Zane Khan, where on that run to Delray Beach, Zane Khan actually pushed Christian Harrison to a third set tiebreak. And then when he won the Naples 25K, he also pushed him to, I think, 7-5 in the third. So Harrison has been sort of stifling Zane Khan's rise this year, funnily enough. But I mean, he's been amazing, very impressive.
Yeah, so I think we should go to Belgrade or to Split. Where do you gonna go?
Yeah, Belgrade's fine with me. Yeah.
Quick travels here, really, from the States to Serbia. But anyhow, a very high profile final, I guess, if you're just if someone's just a casual viewer of the challenger circuit, then definitely Karabayev Bayan Adzumhur is a match that catches the eye. both have been struggling this year. So it's great to see both some find using the Challenger Tour to maybe gain some confidence. And actually, a very funny coincidence here is that they played 2 days in a row, because on Saturday they played in the final of the Challenger, and today they faced each other in the qualies to the tour level event in Belgrade. Actually, Dzumhur retired after the second set, which also is a very rare occurrence, because he won the second set 6-2. I'm not sure what happened there. I only caught a few games of that. But generally, it was a very close final. I think Dzumhur just didn't really perform in the most important moments. He had a set point in the second set, but failed at the first shot after the serve. It was like a backhand into the net. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the way that I saw it, Dzumhur was the better player in the second set for most of it anyway. But Karbayev Baina was just so incredibly efficient at taking his chances, converted 5 out of 6 break points, whereas Dzumhur only converted 3 out of 10. So that was sort of a shame for Dzumhur, and I kind of feel for him now, apparently getting injured in the Belgrade qualies today.
Yeah, and is there anyone else who you'd want to mention from the draw?
Belgrade, I mean, it was kind of funny because Belgrade was the highest, the biggest tournament this week, being 125 points, and I somehow watched the least of it. So, I mean, you already talked about Brendan Nakashima. This was one of the times that I watched him before, but I watched his match against Ben Chetri in the first round, and he's just a very impressive young player, so I look forward to seeing more of Brendan Nakashima. I was also quite impressed that he sort of wasn't afraid to come over to Europe and play on the clay courts as opposed to staying in America and staying on the hard court, so that was interesting for me to see.
Yes, actually last year it was a huge surprise for me as well. And actually it seemed, you know, especially as he was coached by Pat Cash at the time, and like that's a guy who hates clay, and Nakashima just really looked lost on this surface. But you know, it's a sort of an investition in the future, because you know, soon enough, if he's gonna play tour level events only, and that's probably what he hopes to do, then you gotta accept that clay takes 3 months of the year pretty much. And it's great that he keeps trying. And this was probably the best week he's had on clay. I can also relate to the fact that I also watched Belgrade the least, for whatever reason. It turned out the least interesting event of the week. But I would also mention one more thing. Great juniors from Serbia. Sometimes all these wild cards that we get on the Challenger Tour, especially from smaller countries, because you know the States obviously has or Italy, they have a huge base of players. But these smaller countries, sometimes smaller tennis-wise at least, often you know, they often don't really have that many quality players to give them to. But it looks like Serbia is actually growing a great generation of youngsters. First, Marco Topo played in the qualies and almost beat Alessandro Giannesi. He's currently the 28th junior in the world, I think. And then Hamad Medjedovic, he's 17, the 16th ranked junior in the world. He defeated Oscar Ottahir. What I liked about them was definitely aggressive mindset. Great hands at the net. Medjedovic and Topo also played the doubles draw. I don't usually watch much Challenger doubles. We actually had a request to talk more about doubles once. But, it, you know, it's hard when you don't actually watch. But I did make sure to watch their opening round against Ibavi and Zelenay. Obviously a very experienced pair. So, you know, the odds, the betting odds were like absolutely huge for them, but it was only a 6-7, 6-7, 6 win, and they really showed up great. I mean, a lot of youngsters struggle with volleying. They're it's on for many players, it's only something that they develop later on in their careers, and they seem to have that area of the game covered, which is great to see. And also just to mention that Medjedovic also defeated Daniel Lahigalan today in Belgrade Qualies, the world number 114. So it really looks like there's a great generation coming in Serbia. There's also Marko Miladinovic, who was a bit unlucky to run into Taro Daniel both in the Challenger and in Belgrade Qualies.
Yeah, I only got to watch a couple of games of Medjedovic, but looks like a really good player. So I'm quite excited to see him. Just one little thing that I wanted to mention. I'm not sure if everybody else knew this except for me. But I found out that Roberto Carvajal Baena is coached by the Challenger legend, Pere Riba. So that's fun.
I actually did not. Yeah, because at Challengers, you don't often get multiple cameras and, you know, coaching, you don't often see the coaches in the boxes, so it's actually I think tennis really lacks a good system to inform fans, you know, who's the coach. Like on the ATP side, for example, it's horrendously outdated usually. There really isn't a good resource to find out this info, so it's quite frustrating. Yeah, but yeah, great catch. So I guess we could move on to Split right now.
Split, very, very impressive tournament from Kacper Zuk, coming from qualifying and taking the whole thing in the end. In the final, he played against Matthias Borg, who got through to the final after Quentin Halys retired after the first set in their match. But yeah, Kacper Zuk never really let him into the match that much, from what it seemed to me, especially the second set. He was quite dominant. This was my first time really seeing more of Zuk. I think I saw a little bit of his match against Marin Cilic at the ATP Cup. But yeah, sort of flatter heat, flatter hitting, quite good at both offense and defense. I was very impressed with his aggressive returning against Elias Imer in the semifinal, which was a very, very interesting match despite the lopsided scoreline in the second two sets. But yeah, congratulations to Kacper Zuk. He really seems like the real deal. Breaks into the top 200. He's the new number 172. And yeah, after making his first Challenger final in St. Petersburg, he has now won his first title.
Yeah, and actually, you know, he played six Challenger Tour events in this year and made at least the quarterfinals at every single one of them. So it's really impressive, especially given, you know, before this year, I think his winner's record on the Challenger Tour was 6-10 with just one semifinal appearance and actually no other quarterfinals than that. It's really an impressive way to progress. Last year, he was kind of screwed by the pandemic, actually. Everyone was, but what I mean was that by the ranking freeze, simply the cutoffs for Challenger draws became so much higher. And in the latter half of 2020, he had to play a lot of ITF events. Well, he didn't complain. He went and won a 25K in Poznan, in Hamburg, in Valle de Lobo. So just, you know, use that time great. We talked earlier about players from, it was more of a monologue for me, but about players from smaller countries, you know, considering whether to go to college or not. And actually just before ATP Cup 2020, which you mentioned, Zuk was contemplating college. And, you know, after the ATP Cup, he was supposed to decide and ended up going pro, which, after, you know, some months last year, was looking like we weren't really sure if he was going to make it, but it turns out it's gonna work out. I think he has a lot of potential. As you mentioned, he's a bit of a flatter, aggressive hitter, so, you know, theoretically it shouldn't work that great on clay. But he, you know, in Poland, as in Slovakia, I believe we play a lot of clay court tennis in the summer, so he's definitely a natural on this surface. I was probably expecting him to get his first challenger on indoors, but
yeah, I was going to ask you this about what do you think is his best surface?
I always thought it was definitely indoors. Like when I was sitting at the stands on many matches of Zhuge and talked about him with many people. But I always kept saying that I don't understand why is he playing on clay so much? Why is he just not looking for opportunities on hard? Then after the ATP Cup, I was like, yes, you see, I told you, you should play on hard. And right now, I don't know. I mean, everything I see in his game tells me he should have a higher peak on hard. But as we can see, you know, even on such a high level as the Challenger circuit, it was enough to triumph. And honestly, last week he was in the semis, and I don't think there's anyone who would disagree that he was the better player against Kavčić in the first set and a half, maybe not a set and a half, in the first set. And then just it was his level that dropped, not Kavčić. You also mentioned something about his defense. I think you can't really say it's something people overlook, because you know it's a player who hasn't really been talked about that much yet. But I think his defense on the backhand, on open stance, on the slide is excellent. And it's also, it was of massive help today against Borg, because both players were looking to kind of get the initiative early on. And there really isn't a lot of things that players on the Challenger circuit have been able to achieve when Zhuge is playing like today, just going big from both wings and barely missing. So I'm definitely happy to watch it, and hopefully it continues. He's gonna take like a break of 2 or 3 weeks right now. He's actually signed up for Prague Challenger still to play qualies, because he the sign up was before his new ranking comes in. But you know, it's obviously he shouldn't be playing qualies at this point, but it's gonna be the last week he does. After that, he's signed up for Heilbronn, and then it's gonna be the new ranking, the 172, that's gonna decide. So yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, somebody else that impressed me from Split was Thanasi Kokkinakis. I was sort of looking forward to watching him play again in a very much different setting than I'm used to seeing Kokkinakis out here on a clay court challenger in Croatia. but yeah, I was very impressed. I watched a bit of his match against Ajduković, who Ajduković was playing quite well there for a lot of it. And Ajduković is a big hitter, big forehand swing. And Kokkinakis went through, and then I watched him absolutely dismantle Filip Horanski in the second round. I mean, it was brutal, 6-1, 6-2, which was almost a generous scoreline, because he did not give him a sniff of anything in that match. So yeah, I was a bit surprised to see him lose to Quentin Halys in the quarterfinals, but I couldn't watch that match, unfortunately.
Yeah, fully agree about Kokkinakis. He's also been really impressive, just impressing me in the past couple of weeks. Not someone you expect, as you said, on European clay courts, but he's really making, I think he's been kind of, maybe not unlucky that, but two quarterfinals, but I think he's playing a lot better than that, even, you know, even if two quarterfinals in Split is obviously a great result. I don't know if there's anyone else I would pick up from the Split draw. Maybe Aleksandar Vukic too. I mean, a lot of people still consider him maybe not a serve bot, but someone who just plays big and doesn't really move that well, and probably shouldn't be playing that well on clay. But it looks like his great form simply transcends to any surface he tries himself on right now, so definitely also someone that I'm looking forward to follow. Also a former Courage player. I think he played for University of Illinois. So should we go to...
I just wanted to quickly mention, just real quick, before we move on, the first match that I watched this week, which was actually the first challenger match that I've watched in a while. It was sort of a comeback for me to following more challengers. But yeah, I watched Božo Barun. in the qualifying final round, because I just wanted to see what he was, because this guy is unranked. He never broke even the top 800 in juniors. He only ever beat one ATP ranked player in his career. And then somehow he beat Moroni in the first qualifying round. So I watched his match against Klein. And yeah, I still don't get it. He's really not that good. Klein, I mean, it's almost this like Slovak national thing where whenever you're the favorite, you struggle a bit more. And like throughout the first set, he was quite good, because Barun just seemed nervous. Like he couldn't hold rallies past five or six. He would be like, by the time he got to that point, he'd be way out of position or missing. And I mean, he started playing a bit more solid in the second set. Klein started to do sort of struggle, so it was a 6-4 set. But yeah, I just wanted to mention this guy that somehow made the second round of qualifying here, that I was just so confused by.
Yeah, I didn't watch the match against Moroni either, so I'm not sure what happened there, but I'm just looking at the odds for that, 15-1 on Barun. We'll see. I mean, Croatia has a lot of talented juniors. This doesn't seem to be one of them. I also caught a couple of games from the match you mentioned against Klein. And I remember you telling me that you're gonna watch that and see what that Barun guy is about. And yeah, I mean,
yeah, I'm going to ask. I mean, we can cut this out if it's not good to talk about this. But has Moroni ever had like a history of match fixing or something? Because
I don't think he's been, you know, one of these guys that are constantly mentioned with that. But looking at that match, at the results, at how it went, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. Obviously not throwing around any accusations, but it kind of, you know, it has all the classic markings of a solid match, I guess. Okay, so I thought we can go to the upset and match of the week segment.
Okay,
right,
yes,
now.
Yes,
so maybe we could start with the upset. So I guess our pick could be the same, but maybe you can start and we'll see.
Sure, my upset of the week by far is Zayn Khan beating Yasutaka Uchihime in the second round of Orlando, 7-6, 7-6. Are we similar there?
No, actually no. Oh, mine and also by far was one I already mentioned. So Hamad Medvedevic over Oscar Otta. I know what this form hasn't been great. Neither has Uchiyama's, obviously. But you know, just seeing a 17-year-old just this month. Well, this month or maybe not. Maybe that's too strong of a word, but definitely be the dominant player and just show that he's was at least a class better on the day than Otta. That definitely took me by surprise. And what about match of the week? I honestly have to say that I found this extremely tough. There wasn't
me too, yeah. Very much. I decided to go for a very, how to say it? It's a very weird pick for match of the week, but I have reasons for this. My match of the week is the split semifinal between Kacper Zouk and Elias Emer. Just because I feel like those are three sets which showcased Kacper Zouk's game in a very interesting manner. The first set, he wasn't playing great. He was missing quite a bit, and he was sort of playing his regular defensive clay court game. And it was an interesting set. It went to a tiebreak. Emer took it in the end. And then set two, Kacper Zouk just turned it on. He was rushing his returns. He went to his game. It started going in. It was beautiful to watch. And Emer didn't really adjust that set. He just sort of kept playing his game until he lost it 6-love. And then after Kacper Zouk broke for 2-love in the third, Emer started playing aggressively too. And that's when I sort of got to see Kacper Zouk's defense, and it was very solid, and he held solid. He made Emer miss when he decided to go more aggressive. And it ended up 6-1. So it's a bit of a lopsided match, but I felt like it was just such an interesting showcase of a player's game that I wanted to include it as my match of the week, when there wasn't really, at least from the matches that I watched, I didn't really watch like a full-on you know, three set battle classic that would take it. So I decided to go for this.
Yeah, I also thought about this one, actually. And as you said, there wasn't really anything that mixed up the drama of a third set tiebreak with great quality throughout. So there's a lot of good picks here. I decided to opt for drama instead of quality more, although the quality wasn't bad, and go for Tsemilkal over Hugo Gaston, also from Split. You know, it went 9-7, I think, in the first set tiebreak, so a lot of drama. And honestly, it's always fun to watch someone try to solve the Gaston riddle, just these constant drop shots and just tactics you see on a regular basis, but you just don't expect the amount of in one single set, in one single point, in one single rally. Yeah, so I guess that's it, and we should go to preview next week then. Where do you want to go now? Actually, we have an even wider spectrum of continents and countries. We got the US, Italy, and Salinas is in Ecuador, right? Yeah, Ecuador.
Yeah, we can start with the Rome Challenger, I think.
All right. Classic. You know, the most normal one for us, let's say.
It looks like a typical European clay court challenger draw to me. A couple of interesting things. I double checked it. I was almost sure that it was a different site, but it is indeed at a different site to the Rome Masters that's played. Actually, some players that are in here, Guido Andreozzi, for example, who plays Gregor Barrer, the first seed in the first round. Fun fact, hasn't won a match since October 2019. He's lost all his matches this year and didn't play in 2020. So he's looking for his first win in a year and a half now.
Yeah, he can be quite an excellent clay courter, I think, but I know him very well from the two titles he had in Szczecin. In 2019-18, but yeah, lately it's been a disaster. First because of an injury, and right now just can't win. You know, the top seed, but is he that much of an underdog normally against Barrere on clay? Probably not. But yeah, in this form, yeah. Also again, Kokkinakis, so that's definitely someone we're gonna follow. And Bernard Tomic playing again. He's actually showing quite some effort. His win-loss record on clay career-wise is absolutely dreadful. I think even counting futures and challenger tour events, it's like 31 to 61, something like that. You know, for a player who was in the top 20, that's absolutely horrible. But you know, that's how his game is on clay. He can't really move on it. You know, the forehand is so, and backhand too is so flat. You can't do much, but it's always fun. You know, he's always fun to watch when he's trying, and lately he's been. So I'm definitely, pretty much since the start of the year, he's really. This year he played the Monte Carlo qualies and somehow got a wild card to that and even won a match. So.
I would say it's quite an interesting draw in that the top two seeds aren't really that strong, or I don't think that they're super like expected to win this really. So it sort of opens the door for interesting stuff to happen. Some of potential qualifiers in here. One that's unlikely but would be very interesting is Zizou Bergs, who's obviously, I've heard of him. I've not watched him yet, but he's won two challengers.
But I think he was like...
Yeah, he's 2-5 down in the third.
Yeah, to Lamazine. The match was delayed for tomorrow. So yeah, that's really unlikely. I'm not sure how he's going to be on clay. I don't think I've ever watched him on clay. I've watched a lot of him indoors, but you know.
Alex Molchan could be an interesting qualifier. He's not as young as people in Slovakia would like him to be. but you know, he he and Klein are sort of trying to break through at the challengers, and I mean there are big hopes until our next big hope in Pribara, which I mean it's going to be a good couple of years before we see him I think. But yeah, so Alex Molchan plays Dennis Istomin in his qualifying final round. So that should be an interesting match. And then he could mix it up. I mean, if you get somebody like Alex Bolt, who I'm not really sure how much pedigree Alex Bolt has on clay. I don't think I've ever watched him outside of Australia, actually.
Yeah.
I usually just see him in like a random Australian Open match. I feel like he could mix it up in there.
Okay, and since this week we actually thought it's gonna be a massive flop. It's super hard on the challenger circuit. As you said, for example, here, you know, the top two seeds, I don't think we're going for any of them. So it's gonna be really hard, but we're gonna try to pick our winners. I don't think we're gonna like try to convince each other. It's probably gonna be separate. We can make some sort of a contest from that. You know, who gets more right. It's probably very likely that we're gonna go 0-3. But who is your pick to win Rome?
So for my draw prediction that I sort of laid out here, I have Paolo Lorenzi defeating Matthias Borg in the final.
Oh.
I had Emer facing him in the semifinals, and Lorenzi actually has a 2-0 head-to-head against Emer and 2-0 head-to-head against Borg. So that's how I sort of ended up with that, even though I didn't really plan it when I was laying out the draw prediction. But
okay. Lorenzi is a bold pick, definitely. I mean, you know, for how he's played most of the year, but I'm definitely a fan. Like, you know, the commitments and this guy has the love for tennis is great to watch. I went for Thanasi Kokkinakis. It's a bit tougher draw, I guess, if you compare it to Split. And you know, in Split, he went out in the quarters twice. But I think this could really happen. Obviously, clay is also not his preferred surface. But you know, we mentioned he was playing great. And I think maybe at some point it does happen. We'll see. You know,
I'm very excited for the potential of Kokkinakis against Gaston in the second round.
Yeah, that should be great.
I would very much like to watch.
And it's pretty likely to happen given Clark's form and Escobedo's clay lack of anything. So maybe I'll go to Tallahassee right now. And that's actually a question I wanted to ask you. It's played on green clay. And
yes.
You know, having lived in the States, and as you said, you played tennis, I assume you had an opportunity to try that.
So I trained, this was when I still took tennis quite seriously at the time. I trained on green clay for, I think it was 4 months. Where it was sort of like an overlay. So I've got a good grip of it. The way that I would describe it, it's obviously been a while for me. But the movement is similar to red clay. You it's very advantageous if you slide and so on. But I would say the bounces are not super different from hard courts. So I would say movement-wise, you move on it like you do on clay. But when you look at the actual bounces, they're very much, I would say they're much closer to hard courts than they are to regular red clay.
Okay. Yeah, that's I never had the opportunity to try. So
I don't think you can really find it outside of the US.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I watched some YouTube videos of some amateurs playing, and actually, you know, when you watch a tournament on green clay, it turns out that it looks quite similar. they're moving in a very, you know, very specific way that doesn't really happen. Like, I'm not obviously talking about sliding, but I don't know, just footwork seems very, very, very specific for me, very, very peculiar. Anyhow, we've got, as you mentioned, you actually mentioned Brooksby there. I have no idea how he's gonna do on green clay. I think it's a tournament where the surface is actually gonna matter a lot. Like, for example, we've got Juan Manuel Cherundolo, who won Buenos Aires last year, and last February, obviously. And it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to the additional pressure.
He actually won
Cordoba. Cordoba, yes. Buenos Aires was the one where, Francisco was in the finals. I always mix up these South American events. I actually mix up, you know, whatever the continent is, I mix up
the events, the brothers, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, given how he plays, I think green clay should be amazing for him. but I don't think he's ever played on it, so it might be a bit of a weird thing. Ivo Karlovic is playing. He's residing in the States right now, so I was a bit surprised to see that he didn't go to Europe for the indoor season. So probably just was, you know, not wanting to leave his family for even for a week or two right now. I'm always excited to watch him. I know it's not a popular opinion.
Me but, too.
Oh, okay. That's great. I mean, anyone who serves in volleys is a good watch, I think. And I'm definitely going to watch, if I can, almost every match of his.
Some of the other stuff to mention is it's Ivo Karlovic's first challenger since playing Calgary in February 2020. Ryan Harrison is in here with a wildcard playing Matt Ebden in the first round. For Harrison, it's only his second tournament in 2021. I'm quite curious to see how this is going to fold out. Should we go into the predictions?
Yeah, okay. As with Rome, it was super hard for me, honestly.
Yeah. Obviously, I like watching Ivo Karlovic, but I have him losing in the first round, unfortunately. And I have the player who defeats him going all the way and winning it, Bjorn Fratangelo. I had him defeating Cerundolo in the final.
Yeah, Fratangelo is a very good pick. I'm looking at the draw right now and I'm thinking, why didn't I pick Fratangelo? I don't know, maybe it's my love for Ivo Karlovic that made me think that maybe Fratangelo isn't winning this. I went for someone pretty random, honestly. I mean, I went for Dmitry Popko. He has a lot of experience on green clay. I remember he won a few ITFs there in 2019. He actually hasn't had a good season, but in 2020 he was constantly making the quarters and semis in challengers. And I just think it has to happen at some point. And because this draw is very, very random. Like, no, obviously not random in terms of, but you know, the players are very similar in terms of level, and the green clay can really mix it up. So I just thought, well, why not? Maybe right now. But Fratangelo is probably a better pick. Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, to be fair, Popko's draw is quite kind, I think.
To the quarters, yeah.
To the quarters where he faces Denis Kudla. But then, you know, anything can happen. Some of the qualifiers that I forgot to mention that could be interesting: Donald Young, Philippe Cristian Gianu, the Romanian young player, and then obviously your boy Kovacevic is also in the qualifying.
Kovacevic actually played Gianu today, and
did he actually lose?
Yeah, he lost.
I wrote this earlier today. I forgot to check.
if you actually knew that would be, you know, quite a bit of a joke at me, but no.
I'm really excited to watch Kovacevic or something, because I want to know.
Well, you're not gonna get a chance to this week.
Yeah, not this week, no.
Gianu is a very good player too. I don't remember how old he is, like 17 or 18. He won in a third set tiebreak today, so it was really close. He's 19, sorry. 19, yes. The Young and Gianu could definitely do something in the main draw if they make it through. So should we go to Salinas now?
Yes, this was the hardest one for me to try and make sense of, because it's the one where I know the players the least, I think.
Yeah.
Overall as a group. It's played on hard, which sort of bamboozled me. I didn't realize that it was played on hard. I assumed it was a clay court event. So I was very surprised to see Uchiyama there as the first seed, because I was like, why on earth would he go to Salinas to play on clay when he could stay on, like, in Tallahassee and play on the clay that he would like more? But no, it's a hard court. Uchiyama top seed, Alejandro Tabilot the second seed, some other interesting guys in there, Nicolas Jari with the wild card, Thiago Agustin Tirante, who's a former junior number one, and actually there's a Tunisian derby in the first round between Mansouri and Dugaz, which I bet doesn't happen a whole lot, a Tunisian first round derby. But yeah, it's the first meeting between them since a futures in Cameroon in 2018.
We're not gonna lie to the listeners. It's not super exciting. It's a Challenger 80. I think the next event in Salinas, the week after that, will be a Challenger 50. But the draw, yeah, the draw could make it. Like without Uchiyama, this could have been a Challenger 50. Yeah. But it's a great opportunity for some talented players to get a lot more points than they would usually. I think there are a lot of players once again who could win this. Well, I'll just say who I went for. Yeah. I was definitely thinking of Nicolas Jarry. I think he's been playing really well since he came back. I didn't really think that, you know, it was because of the substances that he took that he was this good, but I thought it would be, you know, a bit more of a lengthy process for him to get back to a competitive level, but he is there. And I actually went for Tim van Rietoven, who's playing the top seed in the first round. So this might seem like an absolutely stupid pick, but I think on hard, he's been making great progress. 2 weeks ago, he won an ITF 25K in BL, which was actually one of the most stacked ITF events we got this year. He serves really big. Last week, he played in, as I say, I always mix up events, Orlando. And he lost to Kudla 7-5 in the second round, actually having led 4-2 in the decider. And, you know, looking at Uchiyama's form, I think he has a real shot for an upset there. And if he would do that, then I think the draw really opens up. I think whoever wins from Uchiyama, van Rietoven has a real good shot at making the finals. Maybe Cerik Bilek could be someone to stop them, but Uchiyama, van Rietoven is a match for at least a semi, you know, I mean, a semi in my mind, but I might be completely wrong on that, but I went for Tim van Rietoven.
Yeah, I sort of went with what I know in this draw, in a draw where I haven't seen a lot of the players that I'm talking about here. So I went for Christopher Eubanks over Uchiyama in the final. It's going to be a sneaky tough road, I think. He plays Jesper de Jong, who has sort of popped onto the scene this year. I've not really seen his name before this year, and I'm yet to watch him play, but I'm curious about that match. But yeah, then he would probably have to play Kiros in the quarterfinals. I actually made the quarterfinals in Delray Beach, which I completely forgot. But yeah, then I have him beating Harry in the semifinals and Uchiyama in the final. So Chris Eubanks is my pick.
Yeah, not much to pick out from the quarters here as well. Well, Alejandro Gonzalez used to be a fantastic player, and I think he can't remember the exact results right now, but I think he played in these events in Naples, the big ITFs in the States this year, and done pretty well. So that's someone who could potentially get on a bit of a run.
Yes, somebody that I could also see is potentially Nicolas Mejia.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of younger Colombian player. I remember seeing him all the way back at Orange Bowl 2015 when he was still playing in the under-16s category. He wasn't even playing the actual junior event there. But yeah, quite solid player, both on clay and hard courts. So I feel like if he qualifies and gets the right qualifying spot, he could win a couple of rounds.
Yeah, especially as there's a, I think there's a qualifier versus a qualifier spot.
Yes, close, and there's also a qualifier against Hidalgo, who is a wild card. So a couple of good landing spots there for the qualifiers.
Yeah, the one against Barrios Vera could be a bit tougher. Oh, yeah. Mm. So I guess that's where we're going to finish at. We'll see next week if the predictions were any good. Don't expect that. But maybe, I mean, you know, we're gonna try to make educated guesses, and maybe one time it's just gonna pan out and someone is gonna get 3 out of 3 or however, whichever. Yeah, we've been talking for a long time, I think, and I'm suddenly just, I lost my brain. Yeah. Somewhere. Anyhow, thanks for listening, and well, we're hoping that you liked this first episode with Jakub. I think it went well, actually pretty great.
And yeah, I had a great time, so I hope to be back.
Yeah, I definitely think you can be back next week. I think you earned the right to. So yeah, we're probably gonna see you. We're going to see you in a week, and when we're going to discuss the events of Rome, Tallahassee, and Salinas. So once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for the questions that you sent, and hopefully we answered them the way you wanted. So yeah, bye.
Hope all of you enjoyed Damien's episode covering the ATP Challenger Tour. Again, we here at Cracked Rackets so excited to have Damien on our team moving forward. You can expect him on this podcast at the beginning of every week recapping the ATP Challenger Tour. You can also expect to hear him as a contributor on our other Cracked Rackets platforms. He's going to join me on the mini break, hopefully at least once a week. He's going to be writing for our website, crackedrackets.com. Again, we're so excited to incorporate all of Damien's work. I think he's immensely talented. I know it's a little condescending considering we're pretty similar in age, but you know, that's what we want Cracked Rackets to be, a platform for other young voices, just voices across the tennis world who may otherwise not have their work, their thoughts shared. That's what we try to do here at Cracked Rackets. So again, so excited to have Damien on the team moving forward. Of course, if you have missed any of our other content of late, you need to catch up on all things happening in the tennis world. Be sure to head to our website, crackedrackets.com. Of course, on this podcast, we're going to be covering the Challenger Tour later in the week with David Gertler. We're going to talk college tennis with Matt Stachowiak. Chris Halioris will be covering all of the week's action on the ATP and WTA levels on our mini break podcast feed. And then I got to find us a good Cracked Interviews guest this week. I haven't quite found one yet, but I'm going to, I promise all of you listeners. So be on the lookout for that later in the week. Of course, again, if you need more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, we are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at Great Shout Pod. Shout out as always to our super producers Max Fligner and Daniel Westhoff for the of an editing job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends at Turner Tennis. Again, to join the Turner team, email sales@uniquesports.com or call 800-554-3707. With that in mind, for our wonderful new contributor Damien Custin, his co-host, for super producers Max Fligner and Daniel Westhoff, for our friends at Turner Tennis, and for all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. Hey, great shot, and we'll see you all next time. Thanks, everyone.